Well, we're back at the captain's table today, and somebody's back.
Yep. Nice to be here. Good to be back.
Just flown in?
Flown in this morning.
EY-001?
004, I think it was. Great. I think it was. It was a pretty empty flight, but it's reassuring just to drive here and hear two hapless goons on the radio pumping out the same monotonous platitudes and same stuff. So, nothing changes. It's a good day.
Welcome back.
Thank you, mate.
We've missed you.
It's good to be here.
We've had a few people through the captain's table while you've been away.
I think I've missed quite a lot, haven't I?
Well, yeah. We've got plenty of time to catch up on that.
Good. Look forward to it.
But we've got a great guest today.
Yeah, who's here today?
Today we've got Matt Toogood.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, Matt from Raw Coffee, who's been here for, well, we'll talk about how long you've been here, but it's great to have you on board.
Yeah, welcome to the table.
And, looking forward to chatting about coffee today, which is something certainly we all share a like for. So let's kick into it.
C for coffee. Yeah.
So Matt, when did you arrive to Dubai or the Middle East?
This is my 14th year here.
14th year.
Yeah. So back in the days where
2007.
We 2008. Yeah. So we when we were racing Ferraris every afternoon down Shakeside Road, and you used to roll the dice to go, okay, is it going to take me 20 minutes or 2 hours to get to Abu Dubai, based on the amount of crashes that were going to happen.
That's true.
It was a different world when we
got you just arrived pre-crash.
I arrived just before the crash. So I think we paid for the shittiest, tiniest little villa in Jumeirah. I think we paid $300,000 for a year, that was back in those days. Mm.
It certainly was a different time.
I was just going to say, and the plan was, it wasn't Raw straight away, was it?
No. So I actually came up here. My wife is an air traffic controller, and she had done 12 years staring out a window in Auckland, and said, hey, it's about time I had a crack at my job. I reckon Dubai is going to be the biggest airport in the world, so can we go and work there? And we knew a number of Kiwis who were already up here. As we came up here, did a bit of an explore, went out to Fujairah for a romantic weekend, and then decided to move up here. And then I came up just to be a house bum, which was fantastic. I got myself a golf membership down at Jebel Ali for the summer season. And I played golf every morning. Thought it would be awesome just to...
So you're going to be a Jumeirah Jim?
Completely, Jumeirah Jimmy. Yeah. And that was going to be great and lasted about, I think, maybe 3 weeks.
Itchy feet.
Can't do
I
this.
I need to do something.
Can't do this.
So, let's think. Did you spot a gap in the market? What was the existing coffee market like at the time?
What happened.
Yeah.
I went to the supermarket and it was... Spinnies at Mikado, and went there and went to the coffee aisle and started looking at what the coffee was. And I picked up the phone and I rang Tess and I said, there's no coffee. And she went, no, that is coffee. I said, no, there's no coffee. And so rang her boss, who was a friend, that night and said, okay, so where do you get coffee? He said, oh, well, there's this one lady, she's a Kiwi, and she started this roastery. You could buy coffee from her. And, okay, where is this? So found Kim and went in there and tried her coffee. And it was like, okay, this is okay. It's not quite Auckland standard, but, this is all right. And didn't really think about it too much. Our container arrived up and we'd managed to stuff quite a lot of coffee into there. So I think I had about 2 months worth of coffee.
So you're a self professed coffee addict freak or aficionado from before.
So I was, I'm not sure if we're meant to be saying too much. I was a coffee wanker, right? And then I became Sir Coffee Wanker.
Yeah. Right, good.
And now I'm Sir Coffee Wanker Esquire.
Lord Coffee of Wanker.
I was working in for Telecom New Zealand, and basically the day consisted of hitting the coffee shop downstairs four times. Okay. You'd hit it four times a day, 10 minutes, espresso, you do that. And it just became a routine. The coffee I liked was two coffee shops down. My mates liked the coffee shop next door. The way that we did coffee. And so coming up here, we had our own coffee machine at home. We had an espresso machine, a Rocket. And, you know, that was just the way we did. My rocket broke and I needed parts for it. So I contacted the guy who owned it, who happens to be another Kiwi who was living up in Milan with Rocket. And he said, actually, this lady, Kim. And I went, I've already met this lady, Kim. She's the only person in the coffee business. So, you know, you meet someone twice and you go, oh, okay. And what ended up happening is that I realized that I couldn't just play golf. And so I did a, I decided to do a marketing paper through Polytech. And part of it was doing a case study on a business. And so I write up this whole case study and so I rang Kim up and I said, hey, listen, can I come and ask you some questions? I want to do a case study on your business. Did it all, wrote it all up. And then when I finished it, I got an A for it. So I handed it to Kim and said, here, you know, here's this business plan I wrote for you to expand into the retail coffee market.
Yeah.
And she read it. She said, oh, that's really cool. And I said, do you want to give it a try? And she said, yeah, but I can't afford it. I said, oh, I know that. I've done an interview with you. I know you can't afford it. I said, well, I'll come in and do it. So I jumped into the business. 2 weeks later, I sat down with her and her husband at the time, and I said, this isn't going to work. We need to really look at the business in a different way.
Sure.
You know, I have the ability to look at some of the ways that we could enhance the business. And the rest is basically history. You know, 6 months later, we agreed on a partnership. And then we just developed the business from there. But basically, both of us came in with a passion to do something.
Yeah.
Dubai gives you that amazing ability just to flex muscles that you've never flexed before. You know, you can make mistakes here and it doesn't kill you.
Sure.
I reckon 5 times over the last 14 years, we've made mistakes that would have killed the business if we'd been at home. But we were just able to just do what it is because we had a core belief in what we were doing.
And the original idea was for the distribution of coffee and having the coffee store as well in our cause?
Okay, so Kim's original plan was that she was going to supply retail coffee to houses.
To houses, okay, right.
And that started out slowly. Right. They had spent all their money before they'd even sold a bean.
Sure.
And in fact, big problems. And it ended up the first commercial customer was Gordon Ramsay at Via restaurant down in the Hilton. And then more and more commercial customers came on board, and immediately we realized that cafes and restaurants were desperate for a product. They were just because there was nothing to supply.
So
the B2C was the idea, and B2B became the mainstay. And very, very quickly, B2B became huge for us.
So what were they doing up to that point? Was it just small traders?
There was you know, the local coffee roasteries, which do the nuts and everything else, basically take whatever was coffee and burn it. And then there was a few importers of very, very poor quality coffee. And that was about it. There was literally no options. And the quality was just appalling. You know, I remember finding a can of Illy that was 11 months old on the you know, that was the best you could possibly get at a supermarket, then. You know, and one of the things that I'll let the cat out of the bag, you don't actually have to be very good at roasting coffee 14 years ago. What you had to be is fresh. Because you know that aroma that you get from coffee, and that's the thing that attracts us all, that beautiful smell. Even if you don't drink coffee, you like the smell of coffee. That aroma is what the flavor should be in the cup. So if you're smelling the coffee, you're not drinking the best quality. So if you've got something that's a year old or even 3 months old, all the aroma's gone, which is all the flavor in the cup. So what we did is introduce a product that was fresh. And you know, we think back to what we were doing that long ago, and it wasn't fantastic.
And just to be clear about when you're saying fresh, are you talking about freshly roasted and then consumed, freshly imported? What's the differentiation between that?
When you roast coffee, you chemically change its structure.
Yeah.
You have to allow that coffee to what we call rest. You have to allow it to degas because it produces carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide officially, according to the scientists, takes 10 days to exit from a bean once it's been roasted. So if you take a coffee that's been roasted for 10 minutes old and you try and drink it, it tastes terrible. It's just full of gas and it's really unsettled. It's a little bit like you open a bottle of wine, give it 5 minutes to relax, to oxidize a little bit. It's much more developed. So the coffee is exactly the same. But what ends up happening is that if you grind it, you accelerate that degassing process really quickly. Okay. So after, say, 3 or 4 days, you could grind it and you could manually pour over or do a filter type thing or a French press, and the coffee will taste okay. Mm. But if you're using it for espresso, if you use it before 8 days, it's not going to be the best it possibly can be.
Right.
But the negative side is that the moment that you grind the coffee, immediately you're allowing all the aroma to go, and you actually lose 50% of the flavor in 2 minutes.
Okay, so I'm getting it. The reason why serious coffee drinkers have the whole bean that's roasted, and then they grind it themselves, and then they use what they want. Okay.
Yeah. So we know that people need to. Often people don't have a grinder, but like we sell espresso machines and have done for forever.
Yeah.
And I say to somebody before you buy an espresso machine, what grinder have you got? That's more important. So you can improve the quality of your coffee drinking at home by 100% just by grinding it fresh before you make it. Sure. Doesn't matter what way you make it.
That's a great tip.
Great tip. And then if we go back a step, the bean, and we'll talk about the logistics part of it later, which of course is a big problem at the moment. Is there any issue there with a duration of the bean in the bag, how long it's going to be before it becomes
two by day? The green bean, when we buy it from the farmers, we refrigerate our coffee. So when it goes into reefer containers, and then when it arrives, we put it into a fridge. And that's kept at 18 degrees, 60% humidity. And we get probably between 12 and 18 months from when it arrives, it's still good quality. Right? Once you roast it, you let it rest. So 10 days to 14 days is optimum drinking. Unless it's certain types of coffee, there's a couple of coffees that I really love that I actually find that they, if you put them in the right bag, out of the light, no extra air going to it, 6 weeks, they can be really amazing. Pretty much after 2 months, the coffee starts to fade away.
Okay.
And it's not bad, it's just not as good as it was. Mm. After 3-4 months, it's lost all its vibrancy. It's lost the acidity, which is what gives you the brightness and the flavor. In it. I mean, you can drink it, it's still going to have caffeine in it, but it's just not going to be good. It's a little bit like pouring a beer and drinking it the next day.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Understand. And so you must have changed the whole way coffee was.
It was really lucky for us. Because back then we could just literally go, here, try this. And people would just go,
yeah,
wow, that's different.
Yeah.
And they could see it. And that was, I mean, I used to get in trouble because I used to literally see someone walking past with a Starbucks cup, you know, when we're doing a school fair or something.
Yeah,
and I'd run out and I'd grab the cup off them and say, I'll give you two of mine and I'll pay you the money if ours is not better than that. And every single time they'd end up being a customer. And that's basically what we did. As the coffee world here, because there's less people drinking alcohol here, coffee became really, really popular.
Yeah.
So that gap of poor quality coffee has disappeared, which is fantastic. The quality of coffee in the Middle East has gone up significantly, especially in the last 5 years. Mm. So that differentiation now is more about what do you like.
Yeah, right.
Because there's so many different varieties, there's different roasting methods, there's different ways that you can prepare it. So you now can cater to everybody's taste rather than just having bad coffee and good coffee.
Fine. So you've got a little bit more competition in terms of knowledge base. And supply chain.
Yep.
But obviously Roar is the one that, to my mind, is the one that sticks out. It was the first, always has a great name. What are you doing to keep ahead of the competition? How does Roar go now? I mean, for example, we've, you know, the few hundred people that listen in, I mean, a lot of them will be, you know, quite serious coffee drinkers as consumers, specifically in Dubai. Are you still doing a lot to B2C, or are you still doing a lot of B2B, or a bit of both? How can we get Roar?
So COVID turned our business on its ear.
Okay.
Like literally it is not the same business that it was. So our B2B business was 80% of our business pre-COVID. We were expanding into Saudi Arabia. There's a bunch of things that you have to look at when you're doing a B2B supply, which is more around the commercial aspects of what you're doing. The other thing that you've got to do is, like, coffee is one of these things where, like, we have way too much coffee in our stores. And that's basically because Kim and I find all these amazing coffees and we keep buying them, right? But, you know, a lot of these coffees are quite complex, and it's a little bit like, you know, having a really good cut of meat. If you're not a good chef, you can easily destroy something that's really, really high quality. And so what, when you're looking at a commercial supply, you have to balance out, like, so what's their customer going to be like? You know, what are the baristas going to be like? What milk are they using? What water are they using? What's the product going to taste like? So let's match the coffee that's going to be easy. Right? So sometimes, like, Colombian coffees are beautiful. And Mexican coffee, if you make a Mexican coffee badly, it's still better than a Brazilian coffee. You know, so, you know, you find the ways of doing it. When COVID hit and everybody's left the cafes and they're at home, all of a sudden people have got time. So we spent a huge amount of time doing Zoom barista training and, you know, teaching and educating. So all of a sudden you get people at home for 3 months. They've played and they've lifted their coffee game up significantly. We sold, I think, 450 espresso machines. I
was thinking that. How many machines you would
have
sold?
It was just insane.
Right?
And this is not just here, everywhere. You know, the manufacturers just couldn't keep up. So we were just getting plane loads of espresso machines as fast as they could make them and delivering them. We were doing, we went from doing 60 deliveries a day to 450.
Yeah, of course.
And so we ended up with this B2C play, which was, it unfortunately, the volume was huge, but the revenue was very, very small. It was mainly maybe 15% of what we were doing.
You didn't have the coffee drinkers in the cafes.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what you need.
And you know, it doesn't take a mathematician to work out what it actually costs to make a cup of coffee versus what, you know, they're doing at a cafe, right? And there's a, running a cafe, there's a huge amount of cost that people don't understand. But, you know, and most of the time, you know, they need to charge those prices in order to even break even. But, you know, all of a sudden we've got a more mature coffee palate across the whole country because people have spent time to understand what they like. And then, so that actually, B2C supply maintained at actually a very, very high level. In fact, I think we're still running at over double what we were pre-COVID. So that was a nice growth. But what we ended up having to do is really look at what we could do at the cafe side of things. Unfortunately, probably 40% of our commercial customers shut down and didn't reopen. So that wasn't coming back. We had a cafe space that we could, luckily, we've got about 8,000 square feet in our cafe. And we could socially distance, and so we could have enough tables that could just be enough to break even. So we concentrated a huge amount on ourselves.
So how long was that after the lockdown, which I think was April, March, April? Were you immediately able to open that, or did you have several months of closed?
We closed, I think, 2 weeks before we were instructed to close because we felt uncomfortable with our team and things. And we, I can't remember exactly when we reopened the actual cafe, but we did a staggered approach where we had takeaway for nearly a month. And then we started to have people coming in. We redid the whole kitchen, the whole menu. Kim and I actually had some time. So COVID gave us a bit of time to reflect on what we wanted to do. And there was a few things that we wanted to do in the cafe that just what we wanted. You know, we sort of bet on ourselves, said if we like it, people will like it. And so that was, that's become a huge part of it. And I think that, you know, I think the Dubai community pulled together better than most places around the world. And the support was incredible. Like, you know, people were coming in and genuinely just doing it because they knew that it would help us. But, you know, since lockdown, we've nearly doubled our team. We ended up revenue year on year 25% up. So that was quite spectacular.
And the, by dint of the fact that, unfortunately, because a lot of the suppliers and the smaller guys that were supplying coffee are out of business, or maybe they're coming back, there's probably the great chance for growth now as we all come out of out of lockdown, but we're having a far more normal lifestyle.
Yeah. So coffee is the number one consumed drug in the world.
Okay.
Right? It is the number one consumed drug in the world. Okay. So, you know, people, you know, are going, people don't realize how much they rely on their coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true.
You know, and, you know, and it'd be it through tea or through chocolate, right? So caffeine rather than just coffee itself. Dubai prior to COVID was oversaturated with supply of coffee roasteries. So to give you an idea, 3.5, nearly 4 years ago, there was a total of 11 coffee roasteries in Dubai.
Wow. That was there.
Now, well, prior to COVID, I don't know what the number is now, there were 63. Right, so the explosion in roasteries. Now, if you think about, we produce every hour, we can roast finished product 160 kilos of coffee an hour across our machines. Now, we're not a big roastery. You know, there's a lot of bigger roasteries, but you know, your standard roastery is producing somewhere between 50 and 200 kilos an hour.
Yeah.
Now, 200 kilos, that's 20,000 cups of coffee.
That's incredible.
And one of 63.
Yeah, so 63 roasteries producing that. Now, we drink a lot of coffee. Like, I probably drink the equivalent of 6 to 8 espressos a day. That's my normal consumption. So if everybody's drinking 2 cups of coffee, you know, there became an oversupply, right? And that wasn't necessarily good because a lot of people don't you know, you've set up your business, you've got to sell stuff. So all you do is reduce margin to try and increase volume, but it doesn't work.
It's the age-old model of round here, I'm afraid. It's not how it happens, how it works out in the end.
And a lot of the guys, you know, a lot of places here, you know, coffee was a passion. It didn't necessarily have to be a business that had to support itself.
Right.
And then COVID hit and it's like, I'm not interested in that anymore. Right, so they closed down. So that's sort of taken the foot off the every roaster's throat.
But it still underlines, Matt, does it not? The quality absolutely is 100% to be able to reassure the customer that what you're paying for is what you get. And
but this is exactly what happened. So people spent 3 months in their kitchen. Then they come back and they go back to their usual haunt. And that might be a chain brand, international brand. They went, that ain't good enough. And the other thing that they said is, I've got money, but I'm not giving it away. I don't know where my next paycheck's coming from. Everything could change again. So if I'm going to go and pay 20 dirhams for a cup of coffee, you know, I expect it to be here now. And that was brilliant. Because then it was like, let me open my kimono and show you what we do. You know? And part of the reason that we focused a lot is going back to what we did originally, because Kim and I had nothing. We had no money whatsoever. And so we lived hand to mouth. And we would go to any event that could possibly give us a way that we could be introduced to a customer. So it was a school fair or it might be. So it was 3 o'clock in the morning going and dragging a van and setting an espresso machine up and doing it. So you get a bit sort of, you know, scrappy dog about how you want to run your business. Coming out of COVID, exactly the same thing. I want to show you what I can do. I'm in control of my cafe. We can show you what we can do really well. And we've got that bubble under control. And so that's exploded. And now, we've actually decided to open 2 more cafes.
So you've got the one in our cause. Well, before that, there was the 100 metres down the road that I spent a bit of time in.
You spent a lot of time there,
as you remember.
Before that, we're at the Garden Centre.
Before that, you're at the, that's right.
Before that, the original roastery was in DIP. And little known fact, Kim actually sold that roastery to Coffee Planet. That was Coffee Planet's first roastery. So, the Alcoz store is version 5 of Raw. And we've just... been given the huge privilege to be able to do the cafe at Deep Dive Dubai. So we're really excited about that. That's going to be branded under the brand Equalize.
And that's just opened
today. So, and we're also going to be the cafe at Skydive Dubai. Which so we're going to have equalizing above and equalizing below.
So working on, so the Raw brand won't be seen there. It will, it'll be
it's fueled by Roar. So okay. Roar is always going to be the coffee provider and everything there. But we, you know, we've taken the cafe concept, expanded it more into strangely since COVID, we've actually started another business, which is Roar Beverage Trading, which is about providing products that the cafe needs. Because what we realized is that we need hot chocolate, we need iced tea, we need matcha, we need all these other things, we need smoothies, we need everything else. So we're working with
one stop shop
for a cafe.
And there was something that technician Liv picked up today, she mentioned to talk about, is the barista training you do as well, which is crucial for absolutely. What you're saying is absolutely.
So coffee first, you need to have a decent coffee bean. Yeah. The next thing you have to have is good water. Right. You can't, like 99.7% of a coffee is water.
Yeah.
So getting the water right, critical. And I've developed a product called Raw Water, which is using reverse osmosis and remineralization to produce the perfect water for coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So we do that for our things. So you have to have the good equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to service that equipment. So we import equipment, then we have service technicians that can service that. Then you have to have barista training, and that's critical. And then the business needs people to consult with them to help them be a successful cafe.
Yeah, sure.
Right? So how do you do workflow? How do you...
So you'll actually go into a cafe and say, tick, tick, you need to do this. A full consultancy.
Sorry. It's really, really funny. When we're talking to a customer, commercial customer, coffee is the fifth thing that we talk to them about.
Right.
Right? You've got to get all these other things right before you can even think about making a cup of coffee. You know, it's wonderful to, it's fun to make a coffee at home, but you go into, you know, Roar and our Coors on a Friday, the barista's making 700 to 900 coffees in a shift.
Well,
you know, that's working. Yeah. But if you go to New Zealand, in the same shift, you'd be doing 2,000 coffees.
Okay. So if you were to run barista training, well, you do barista training, because I always think for somebody going on an overseas holiday or something like that, to have that training, to be able to turn up somewhere and say, I can be a barista. Must be a fantastic asset. How long does it take? How much does it cost if someone's listening and they wanted to do some training?
Okay, so if you wanted to do, so there's barista training in different forms. Barista training for just fun, right? We do that, which is great. You know, come in on a Saturday, spend 3 hours, drink way too much coffee, go out shaking. But, you know, try latte art. Try a professional espresso machine and learn how to actually operate that. The second set of barista training that we do most of is commercial, right? Which is people here are starting to realize, invest in your staff. Of course. If you're opening place, spend some money on training your people, you know, and then they can do a good job. Mm. And that's hardcore, right? Mm. So that's 3 days full time is the first session that you're doing.
Mm.
30% of that is actually knowledge, and then the rest of it's practical. 60% is practical. We're running a new thing, which is literally starting out as a barista.
Mm-hmm.
It is a course, again, it's a 3-day course.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about 2,000 dirhams. Mm-hmm. But there's different levels to it. So you start at an entry level and you can buy more modules. There is also the formal Specialty Coffee Association, Global Association.
Okay, so there's an accreditation you
there's can an accreditation get. That you can actually go through, right. And that comes in 3 levels. That start, I think it's about to do the whole, I've got my diploma in coffee, which is all the different aspects of coffee, and it took 5 years.
Okay.
And I think we would have spent nearly 100,000 dirhams doing that. You know,
you're a full-blown black belt. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. We're two down
from that's where their squire comes on to Sir Coffee Wanker.
That's good.
But the stuff that we're doing a lot of is exactly that. You know, in fact, we just employed a young gentleman this afternoon who a lot of people have been stuck here. Yeah. They were expecting to finish university and go off and get a job. Now that's not happening.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of that sort of training. But the big thing about coffee training is we can teach somebody. I can teach you to make a coffee in 20 minutes, but to actually make coffee, you just have to practice.
Yeah, sure. Get the basics done, because I always think it's such a good trade to learn. And do you, if you have more tattoos, does that make you a better barista?
If you don't have tattoos, don't even think you're a barista.
And a man bun, I would have thought, probably comes in handy
as well. That used to be. Now
that's no good. We don't do that anymore.
No.
Okay, we heard it here first. Again.
Yeah. But you have to change your facial hair at least 3 times a month.
Okay, good, good. All right, well, that's good to know if I need to change my profession. Okay, so whereabouts are your beans coming from now globally, coming into you now?
Yeah, so we, you know, being in Dubai, when you, you know, remember those days where you, before you even knew what Speedx was?
Yeah, remember that's the old true.
Days,
that's
old
true.
Days of Speedx, right? Yeah, so Speedx was cool before they changed it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's right. Where you need your hammers and your drills and stuff.
Yeah, but yeah. Like I remember the building the first or the second raw when we moved to our course, trying to go and buy screws, and I couldn't get screws, so I was getting screws sent in from you know Canada. Where do you when you're developing something here? How do you work out today what you're going to achieve? Like, if you're developing your podcast, how do you just immediately, like, can you just go down tomorrow and just buy microphones? Can you buy the equipment to do a podcast?
I think I know where you're heading. Yes, you can.
Okay. And is that easy now?
But the important point is, if you're from a standing start, no, it's not, because you've got that knowledge gap.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah.
So I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
So back to the point on coffees and where you're getting it from. You were touching on the point that you said that you'd had a lot of time to think over the past few months. Yeah. So innovation, keeping ahead of the game, adding to your...
We were incredibly lucky that one of the ways that we did is, you know, being, because of that, fact that in Dubai you can't just snap your fingers and get something. We had to diversify our supply chain.
Yeah.
That's also kind of cool because coffee's not coffee. So coffee coming from a different country has a different flavor profile and everything. So we buy coffee from Africa. I love Ethiopian coffees. We've got Kenyan coffee in for the first time in 5 years. We get a lot of coffee from Rwanda, Burundi, Uganda, we have got coffees from. We're buying all through Papua New Guinea, East Timor, Myanmar, Colombia, Peru, Nicaragua, Mexico, Guatemala. You know, we're getting coffees from all over the world and they're all completely different and they're all got their own unique stories behind them.
And so it's pretty well impossible for an aficionado like yourself. It's like, I'm quite interested in wine.
Yep.
And people say, where's the best wine from? It's like, well,
what day is it?
What exactly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, you know,
what are we eating with it?
What mood are you in?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Coffee. So technically, coffee is more complex than wine. If you look at the flavor profiles available in coffee, wine, they say about 800 different flavor profiles. Coffee is over 1,200. And that's the scientists telling us with mass spectrometers that this aroma field is available. You're 100% right. Mm. The difference between wine and coffee is that the winemaker has decided how they want that wine to taste.
Absolutely.
Right?
You can control a lot of it. You can control, in many cases, can control the flavor profile, the alcohol content, the acidity, and it's a combination between where it's been grown
and how long it's barreled for,
actually the interventions or the lack of that they make when they're making it, and that's the same with coffee.
Up until the point that we're not doing the final preparation,
of course,
and a minute adjustment in grind size will completely change the profile on the coffee. But there's rules to it, right? So the basic rules are, when coffee extracts, you get different elements of that extraction. So the first bit that comes off is all the exciting acidity, you know, the super high-end, in-your-in-the-face acids. Then you typically get a lot of the sweetness, and then the last part of the extraction is the bitterness. And you've got to find the cutoff point. But you can manipulate that extraction by changing the grind size. So if you want more frontal acidity, you can make that grind finer, which means that the coffee will extract more quickly and you'll get more into the cup. And if you want to have, you know, more bitterness in the cup or more balance, you can make it coarser. So you can immediately play it. Then you can play with the temperature of the water. So you can, you know, the hotter the temperature, the faster it will extract, the more acidities you'll get. You know, and so if you know the basic rules, you can do it. But there are so many variables, and that's the challenge.
Yeah,
sure. It's the challenge that we face. And this is going back to what I was saying about making sure you match the coffee for the customer, right? So you sometimes you don't want, you want to take those variables away. You know, we've got these whiz bang coffee machines that change the pressure when they're brewing. So they, you know, give you 14 bar and then 6 bar and then do all this other stuff. You know, it's fun.
Yeah.
But
well, in the words of Alexander Pope, a little learning is a dangerous thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you keep up with the knowledge of the latest in coffee, and where is all this information coming from?
You've got to. Well, I mean, I'm lucky that I wake up every day and I go to work and I enjoy what I'm doing.
Yeah.
The most enjoyable part is that we actually have our own quality control lab, which is buried in the bowels of Raw that no one even knows where it is. And we, you know, these days it's about the only time that Kim and I actually spend about an hour together catching up, because we go in and do our quality control. We also do our buying and our cupping. It's what we call cupping when you sample it. And that's just the most beautiful part of my day, because I close the door, you turn on, you flick up, we've got a red light in there because you cup under red lights. And you just immerse yourself. We don't talk when we're actually cupping itself, so it's all quiet. It's just doing it, and that's what I enjoy. And I've actually, you know, we've actually become really good at it, right? So my palate is now very good, but it's training. It can be a bit of a pain, but the day to day stuff. I tell you what, the easiest thing I do is every morning I come in and I get 2 double espressos, and I go off to our sales meeting every morning and I drink that. And if I don't notice the first one, the day's going to be good. If I notice it, there's something wrong, right? Okay, the humidity's too high today, you know, the coffee's not coming out quite right or whatever. So the other thing is that my business is all about sensory experience.
Yeah.
And we actually run a course, a sensory course, which I think is the most fantastic course you can do. It is coffee centric, but it's not about coffee.
Right.
So if anybody says to me, I want to do a course, what should I do? I say, go and do the sensory course, because it's all about understanding how things work. Wow. You know, and we use, I'll let a few secrets out. We use different jelly beans and stuff to give people an sensory experience and how you do it. Once you awaken that part of your brain, it's exactly the same. I love, you know, with different wines and stuff.
Yeah.
And
you need a little bit of coaching, really, to be able to say, well, these are the things, the characteristics you're looking for. And once you start to realize what's there, you're off and away.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're doing and what you're saying, I think.
So if people always ask me, what's the best coffee?
Yeah.
And the answer is, the best coffee is the one that you enjoy the most.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if a customer comes into me and says, I want this super dark burnt roast of coffee, okay, you enjoy that the most. Let me show you some other things that might open your, you know, your knowledge. And, you know, and there are technically better coffees than others. We actually have an international scoring system for coffee.
Right.
So I can cup a coffee and compare with my suppliers, or I can compare with other roasters around the world. And we have a language that we speak. Right, so we talk about, you know, all these different variables. There's 10 different variables in a cup score, and you know we know we can communicate. But what I like is irrelevant when you're doing that score. But that's the thing, is that what I love doing is finding a coffee that someone likes, and that's what we want to work on.
Exactly.
You know, find out, you know, what the captain's coffee is.
The captain's coffee. It's going to take a long time, I think. Got to get it just right.
I think we probably have to do a lot of research and development.
A lot of research.
I think we have to develop your palate first.
Yeah, I think so. Because I know I drink a lot of coffee, but I think I drink a lot of rubbish coffee.
Yeah.
So sometimes I need to. That's what I need to do.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting process. You've got me hooked. I'm in.
Excellent. Well, we're there. You come down and we'll just do it. I actually bought you guys 5.
Yeah. Tell us about this, please.
This is just an easy way of doing it. It's something I never thought we'd do. I never thought we would come up with a solution like this, because it kind of breaks the rules that I've just been talking about. But what we've done is worked out a way of having an easy solution that you just need a kettle, hopefully with good water, and you can do a pour over method. It's a very old system. It's been around for, I think, over 15 years, but we've taken a different approach and made it a specialty coffee. So these are single serve pour over pouches. And then also this is just to get you guys up tomorrow morning. So just some pre-done cold brew. I'm drinking a lot of this at the moment where I do 50% of this and then 50% hot water. And it's the best Americano that you can possibly
I've got get. And that's what you do, just 50% that and hot water.
Yep. Or you can just drink it cold, straight out of the bottle. But this is pretty powerful. There's 200 milligrams of caffeine in that.
I've got an RPM cold, 8 o'clock in the morning with Greg.
I mean, if you're listening in and not viewing, it's an incredibly dark. I'm not going to say viscous because it ain't, but it's just it's rich, dark.
What time zone are you on at the moment, Rick?
I'm minus
three.
Plus three. So it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon for me.
Right
now.
Do you want to go to sleep tonight?
I do, so probably don't go near that. I'm guessing. Right.
I won't touch that after 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
Right. That's 3 o'clock in the morning.
It's rocket fuel.
It's exactly what it's on the bottle. It is. If we're in a different country, we'd call it liquid cocaine.
Oh, okay.
You got any more?
Oh, that's brilliant. Now, Expo's coming up. Yeah. And that's exciting for Raw too, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're the official supplier to the New Zealand Pavilion, which is super, super cool. It's actually an interesting thing. We went and talked to the team there and I said, look, I don't care who you use as your coffee supplier, but I am insisting that this has got to be quality.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't matter who you use, but it's got to be up to New Zealand standards. And they said, yeah, can you help us? And we said, sure. So that's exciting.
Because you're already up there now, aren't you?
We were out there for the trial
run. Oh, that was when
I was out
there.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, so we did. There was a 3-month trial. That was a lot of fun. We learned a lot. Expo is super exciting. Like, and now that they've announced there's going to be the Expat Pass, which is going to be a one ticket thing, and you can do unlimited visits.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Great. Yeah. That's good.
I think it's 500 dirhams or something.
Yeah, it's really good. Season. It is. It's a really good price. Yeah.
I think most people don't realize what's happening at Expo. There is, I believe, there's over 100 food and beverage facilities, like full-on restaurants and things. There's one area that's got over 30 restaurants in it.
Wow.
The New Zealand Pavilion has got a full restaurant doing it. And I think there's going to be a lot. So I think that people are going to be able to use it to go down and do it as a night out.
I mean, they'll have bars and everything there, right? Licensed restaurants.
Yeah, I've seen the wine selection that they're going to have for the New Zealand Pavilion. That's very good.
Oh, that's super. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, that's
I'll be the judge of that. But I'm sure it'll be brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the pavilions themselves are, you know, you're probably in a lot of them. It would take you, I would imagine, 20 visits down there to go and see the whole thing.
Great.
It's huge.
And I was pleasantly surprised when I saw the, I can't remember, but it is, works out pretty cheap if it's just a season ticket.
Yeah. Because they were doing the trial, the car parking, everything is absolutely superb.
Yeah.
So you drive in, you park, you're not walking more than maybe 150 meters to the different sections and everything. It's very, very widely open spaced. So even under these restricted times, you won't feel, even if it's packed, you won't feel that it's packed. And they're also... I don't know what they're going to do. I believe they're probably going to do permanent testing stations there, so they'll have rapid testing on entry.
Okay.
So to give people the confidence to go.
Brilliant.
It's a lot to look forward to. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's actually exciting. It's going to be a shame that the rest of the world is not going to be as easy to get here.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Matt, what we always end with is a little bit about why you love Dubai and what are the reasons are that you're here. Tell us a little bit what you like about this place.
You and I have a similar environment where we both have wives from Canada.
We do,
right?
We do.
So we live halfway between. Halfway between the in-laws.
That's right. That's true.
Or in some ways, you could say it's as far away from the in-laws as you could possibly get.
pretty much true. Yeah. Oh, is that your final answer? Oh, fair enough. We haven't had one of those before. That's fine. That's fine.
It's situated well geographically.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. No, that's super. No, that's great.
I think that every person that I've talked to when they've come to Dubai, I think that you get the first 6 months when you arrive in Dubai, you don't know if you're gonna what's going to happen. I think that you hit a point that you either love it or you hate Dubai. The reason I love Dubai is it's a village.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I actually loved it when we couldn't get everything. I loved that sort of that really edgy part of that was Dubai. You know, we all assume that travel is up until 18 months ago. We assumed that, you know, getting on an airplane and just flying for 6 hours, and that's like it was driving from Auckland to Hamilton.
Correct.
You know, that there was just nothing to us. I mean, the amount of countries that I've visited, you know, my boys, your kids, you know, they experienced a lifestyle which was completely different. Oh, where are we going on holiday? Oh, well, I don't want to go to India again. Can we go somewhere else? Yeah, okay. Do you want to go to Jordan? Oh, well, you know,
exactly.
That was just how we lived. The more that, you know, I find that Dubai is actually more genuine in a lot of places, in a lot of ways. So, you know, if you don't do a good job, everybody's going to know about it.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it is a village. But if you do a good job, people are going to pat you on the back.
Yeah.
You know, the tall poppy syndrome that we unfortunately face back in New Zealand is just non-existent here, you know.
Yeah.
But there's the other side of things that people don't understand that, you know, I was lucky when I was born, you know, my parents took me home to a nice house and they put me into a room and they fed me whenever I wanted to be fed and they read me stories and they, you know, had a mobile hanging over my bed that you know, it stimulated my brain and I got to go to school and I got to do things. You get here and you realize you meet people that they were lucky enough that they actually got food once a day.
Yeah, that's,
you know, that when they could walk, they were given a bottle and told to walk, you know, 5 kilometers to get water and that was part of it. If you were lucky, your sibling was there to look after you while your parents are out in the fields getting enough something that the family kept alive. So when you get exposed to that side of things, it changes the way that you think. You no longer care about whether or not, you know, you're going to, you know, that, it just changes the way you think about life being here.
Yeah.
But equally giving you a huge amount of opportunity. So it's kind of a...
That's a great answer.
Yeah.
A very good way, I think, to
That's a great way to end off. But thanks for coming down.
Hey, yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks,
and
it was great.
And I'm looking forward to seeing how we can drive this Captain's Coffee.
Oh, I'm looking forward
and,
to it.
And let's take it from there. Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Matt. I certainly did. Learned a lot about coffee. Rex?
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. I loved it. It was better than the last time I went. Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, and I'm very excited about learning and getting the coffee for the Captain's Table Coffee. So if you like what we're doing here, please like it and see us on our channel. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you. Bye.